insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Debbie, you and us hadn't played for a while. I want to speak to your mother. Come on, honey.
This is from the movie Days of Wine and Roses.
Oh, no! Sorry.
What, are you drunk?
Oh, I haven't had a drop.
Well, listen, what's the matter with you?
I walked by the Union Square bar. I was going to go in, and I saw myself, my reflection in the window. And I thought, I wonder who that bum is. And then I saw it was me. Now, look at me. I'm a bum. Now, look at me. Look at you. You're a bum. Look at you. And look at us. Look at us. Come on. Look at us. See? A couple of bums.
Bart.
Now, look, listen to me. You got to listen to me. It came to me. All of a sudden, I saw the whole thing. You know why I've been fired from 5 jobs in 4 years? And it's not politics. Like we always say, it's not office politics or jealousy or any of that stuff. It's booze. It's booze.
A couple of drinks.
We have more than a couple of drinks. We get drunk. We stay drunk most of the time. Look at that dump that we live in and the clothes that we wear. We send that child off to school like she's... Looking, I'm a drunk and I don't do my job, and that's it. I'm a drunk and I don't do my job, and I got fired and I can't get a job now, and I... We should have done this a long time ago, taking a look at ourselves and realized we just turned into a couple of bums.
Honey,
what?
Honey, I love you.
I love you too, and I don't mean that I didn't, but we gotta face this, huh? Please.
All right, we just won't drink so much.
No, not so... Look, I got a plan, and we got to do it, honey. We got to make it work. We're going to get sober, but we're going to stay sober. We don't take a drop. Nothing. And then I thought this out all the way home. We're going to go to your father, and we're going to convince him that we mean it, and he'll give us enough money to get off the ground, and then I'll go around to the old place to see, and they'll see that I'm sober, and they'll take me back. Are you with me? Because we got to do it. If we don't do it now, it's going to be too late, and we got to make it work. Are you with me?
I'm always with you, John.
We got to do it, honey. We got to make it work.
Wow.
Oof. That's from Days of Wine and Roses. And I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you got to see that movie. It's just, so that's Jack Lemmon and Lee Remick. And just a little backstory, spoiler alert if you don't mind, but this maybe help you understand why you should see this movie. He's an alcoholic and he's this hotshot salesman. And he shows up at the offices of some place he wants to sell some. I mean, he's like into some big time sales. And Lee Remick, she's this pure as the wind driven snow young woman. She's the receptionist, and he immediately takes a liking to her, and he manages to get her out on a date. And of course, the first thing he wants to do is to have her, you know, have a beer or, you know, whiskey or something like that. She says, well, I don't drink. I've never drunk before. I've, you know, just never been my thing. And that's his world. He's all about the 3-martini lunch and all that. So the trajectory of this movie has to do with not only his own degradation being a drunk, but how he corrupts her into, although she's never had alcohol before, she has no interest in alcohol, he gets her hooked. And it is, I'm telling you, it is a movie that you should see because it will, I don't know, it will affect you in ways that maybe God would like you to be affected. And if you know somebody in this situation, maybe show them that movie, Days of Wine and Roses. I get no benefit in any way other than the satisfaction of knowing that this movie is powerful and it will help you. 888-914-9149. An email came in. Let me say, I think I want to get to this. Okay. An email came in from Anonymous, and I think Anonymous is listening in the Midwest. And Anonymous says, just a quick note about quitting from a recovering alcoholic or alky. If someone is a severe alcoholic, you should really only go cold turkey while being monitored by medical professionals. Blood sugar and blood pressure levels can fluctuate to the extreme. That's a good point. While quitting other drugs is an awful withdrawal experience, I believe that quitting alcohol is the only one that can actually kill you if you aren't careful. Well, word to the wise. And I'm glad that you, Anonymous, brought this up, especially if you yourself went through that, all the more reason to be careful. So thank you for sending that note of caution. That's good to know. I have heard this story before, though. Many times that people say, like we got one today, I prayed the rosary. I began praying the rosary and I stopped. So I suppose cold turkey can be maybe more extreme for people who are so deeply entrenched in alcoholism. But I'm glad Anonymous wrote in to talk about that. Thank you. Let's go to Steve in Lincoln, California. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Patrick. Called the other day and you asked me to call back because we didn't have time. But
oh, good. Okay. Thank you.
The question is, how many degrees of separation from my or my family's immediate destruction is it moral or prudent to justifiably defend with deadly force? So essentially kind of, you know, the first degree we'll call it is if someone comes to my home and they have clear intention to harm or kill. Well, mm-hmm. That's a pretty obvious moral response, right? So
right.
If we move to the second degree, a person comes, let's say we're thinking about what happened in Poland and Nazi Germany and such. If a person comes to escort me or my family's eventual demise and death, mm-hmm. at that point, am I morally justified to use deadly force? And then we can go to a third or fourth degree okay. of removal, but let's start with the second. Someone okay. comes to the door. We know their intention is to take us to some sort of concentration camp or something like that. They may not even, well, anyhow, mm-hmm. What's the answer to number two?
I'd like to begin by reading what the Catechism says, so at least we have a point of reference from what the Church says, and then I'll offer my solution, or at least my answer to the question that you just raised, Steve, in the second degree. So this is from paragraph 2263. The legitimate defense of persons in societies is not an exception to the prohibition against the murder of the innocent that constitutes intentional killing. The act of self-defense can have a double effect: the preservation of one's own life and the killing of the aggressor. The one is intended, the other is not. Love toward oneself remains a fundamental principle of morality. Therefore, it is legitimate to insist on respect for one's own right to life. Someone who defends his life is not guilty of murder, even if he is forced to deal his aggressor a lethal blow. If a man in self-defense uses more than necessary violence, it will be unlawful. Whereas if he repels force with moderation, his defense will be lawful. Nor is it necessary for salvation that a man omit the act of moderate self-defense to avoid killing the other man, since one is bound to take more care of one's own life than of another's. Legitimate defense can be not only a right, but a grave duty for one who is responsible for the lives of others. The defense of the common good requires that an unjust aggressor be rendered unable to cause harm. For this reason, those who legitimately hold authority also have the right to use arms to repel aggressors against the civil community entrusted to their responsibility. So they're referring to law enforcement and military, etc. So with that as our starting point, and if I'm understanding the way you described this second degree, being that it's not in immediate or clear and present danger of being killed on the spot by the aggressor, but your certain knowledge that you are being captured, let's say, to be moved to a place where you have a high reason to believe that you would die there or your family would die there at that place. Do I have Correct. That right?
Correct.
Yeah. This seems to be a line that is a bit gray. And my initial instinct would be to say, no, you would be violating the commandment, thou shalt not kill, if you were not in the immediate danger of being killed then and there. Because it could be argued, Steve, that you could assume and have every reason to assume that death would occur at the place where they're taking you, but you wouldn't know for sure. So that's one complicating factor. But I'm thinking as you're describing this about, let's say, the Israelis who were in their homes on the morning of October 7th when Hamas was killing people indiscriminately, going into homes, killing people. So let's say that you were on a kibbutz and you were in your home and they hadn't gotten to you yet. So they're not in your home. They're not directly attacking you and your family, but you see or you know that they're out there in the community. And if you had a firearm and the Hamas members are walking toward your building, would you be guilty of murder if you were to start picking them off? No, I don't think so. Because even though even though they're not directly attacking you yet, it's tantamount to that, even though they're not like aiming a gun at you, you know that that's the next step. So I'll turn it over to you, Steve.
Yeah, so my concern is less there. To me, that's more black and white. It's more along the lines of the slippery slope we find ourselves here in our current nation, right? It's when those who came to usher the Jews away to their eventual demise, they probably didn't look as bad as the Hamas did going around causing chaos. They were probably there dressed nicely, as we see pictures of them, and they're being, you know, authoritative, their police. You know,
who are we talking about specifically? So
well, so I guess the gradual shift of, I guess I've kind of lost my train of thought here.
Well, okay, so help me out here. Maybe this will help you regain it. Who are we talking, when you say they, nicely dressed, gradual, who are they specifically?
When I was the example of when the Jews were rounded up in various
in Germany,
towns.
Poland. Okay.
Right. They weren't dressed like the Hamas terrorists waving guns and shooting people on the spot.
Well, here's something to think about. In the months and even in some places, even years ahead of the actual roundups and deportations to the death camps, they were gradually ratcheting things up, destroying places of business, beating Jews in the street, indiscriminately shooting them. I mean, so those things did happen as part of the gradual ratcheting up before they were put on the trains. So so let's talk about that scenario. So where do we go from here on this one?
Yeah, so from there, I guess that's my question, because as we move, let's say here in America, as we move towards a digital currency to where now there will be controls for, you know, social credit scores, things like that, where the eventual next steps on this slippery slope becomes, you know, very, very, very tyrannical. Why do we want to wait until, I don't know who makes the call that says, okay, now you're morally justified to push back with deadly force? Like, why do we want to wait until point when the pattern is quite obvious what we're moving towards? And so I'm trying to incrementally go from, okay, you know, now it's just a person who's ushering us to a concentration camp because we won't, you know, use the digital currency. Right.
Okay. I have a clear idea now. So yeah, I would say a resounding absolutely not. Under no circumstances, if the government's announcing, hey, guess what, everybody, cashless society from now on, digital currency, you do not have the moral right to kill anybody in that situation. You may have dire premonitions of worse things to come, and perhaps you're right about those things, but under the circumstances, there's no right morally to start killing sheriff's deputies or police officers or politicians. Absolutely not.
So as let's say that at that point, I'm not able to procure food, I'm not able to procure health care, anything, because I won't take and use their system and call it the mark of the beast or whatever it is. At that point, they are actively doing things that would be my eventual demise. At what point does it not become a justified warlike response?
Not at that point. That's, to me, as clear as day.
So I guess that's what I'm asking. Where would it? Where does the line exist? That's
okay, so let's try to walk toward that line. Not that either of us ever wants to be in that situation. So let me just reiterate my resounding no to there is no moral right. You don't have an ethical permission slip to kill somebody just because they've now implemented a cashless society, all digital society or currency. So let's say then
my caveat is I can't use what I have to purchase food. I'm now being denied the ability to sustain myself.
I get it.
That's the point I want to start from.
Okay, so that's the next step. Absolutely not. So you do not have the right, even though they're going to try to make your life as miserable as possible, and you're going to have to forage for food or flee to the hills or something like that. No, you absolutely do not have the right to kill people as a result of that. Then let's say they say, you know what, Steve, we don't want you out there, you know, roughing it in your tent with your, you know, rifle killing deer to eat and stuff like that. We're going to round you up now. We're going to put you in a prison. No, you do not have the right to start killing sheriff's deputies and police. You have the right to resist. You have the right to flee. You have the right to hide. You have the right. You have all kinds of rights that you can exercise, but you don't have the moral right to kill people, even though things are getting that dire. So let's say you're now in the prison camp, and let's say that you are in some situation where a guard is raising his gun to shoot you or shoot your wife, and you're there and you have a choice. Do I stand by and let this happen, or do I grab the gun, turn it around and shoot him, knowing that I'll be dead in moments because they're going to kill me? You would have that right. At that point now, you've reached the point where your life is directly under attack, and the only reasonable choice would be either allow it to happen or defend yourself. You have the right to defend yourself. But digital currency or any of those preliminary steps leading up to that, no, you would not have that right morally.
So then it's only the first degree acute risk of bodily harm or injury.
I would say so.
So then how do we ever justify war then? If we think of the past few wars, we actively jumped in and we weren't as a nation, you know, I think of World War I specifically, we weren't in acute danger. We crossed an ocean to fight it.
Oh, I'm familiar with that, and you're not wrong about that. But the thing to remember is that sometimes you have, as it said in the catechism that I just quoted, you have a moral obligation to defend people who are under attack. So don't get me wrong. I'm not here as an apologist for Woodrow Wilson or as an apologist for Franklin D. Roosevelt or any president who takes the country to war. But I will say that there is a moral dimension to saying, even though we're not directly under attack, our friends and family are, and we're going to help them by helping defend them, which means lethal force. I mean, that's permissible under the church's just war theory. So yeah, we crossed an ocean, but we did it to help our neighbor who was under direct attack.
Interesting. I see there's an issue with that second degree. If I know that my neighbor in my neighborhood are being gathered up and we know that they are being, you know, whatever, tortured through starvation or actively being killed, I may not be an immediate threat, but it seems almost evil to just allow it to happen because I'm safe for the moment. It seems,
Well, there are lesser and greater evils.
What's the scriptural or worse? I mean, I get that. The explanation of self-defense is seems a little bit separate. Like, where is the actual support for not engaging sooner? Why do we have to wait until the gun is literally pointing at our head?
Well, I'm not prepared to offer you chapter and verse of, you know, passages that may support that. I can tell you that the apostles, when they were rounded up by the Sanhedrin after the death and resurrection of Jesus, and they were preaching Jesus publicly. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with this. They know that the Sanhedrin had caused the death of Jesus indirectly through the Romans, but they were responsible for it. They knew that Stephen in Acts chapter 5 had been put to death by these same people. So now they have been rounded up and they have to give an account before the Sanhedrin. The apostles did not take out swords and start killing the high priests. They didn't start killing the Sanhedrin to defend themselves. So if we want some biblical justification, that comes to my mind as an example, that they, rather than kill people who very, very likely were about to kill them, they didn't do that. they stood up and spoke the truth. And if I had time to think about it, I'm sure I could give you any number of other passages. But even that's not necessary, Steve, because the Bible doesn't tell you anywhere that you can't engage in nuclear war with the intention of destroying population centers. It doesn't need to say that for it to fall under the purview of the moral law. I mean, I don't know more than what you and I have talked about, Steve, but the way it comes across to me is that you're looking for an opportunity to kill somebody. You know, like, how soon can I kill somebody? How soon can I shoot somebody? Well, you know, that's what it comes across to me as.
Where the righteous line exists. I want to know where the righteous line exists. I don't want to offend God ultimately, right? But at the same time, I don't want God to know that I didn't act when I ought to have.
I would say, and this is my honest conviction based upon what we both know about the moral law, is that unless and until it gets to the point where your life is directly threatened, you do not have the moral option of killing somebody. So if the deputy sheriff shows up at your door and says, "Hey, Steve, check it out. They're confiscating all the guns," you don't have a right to kill him. If they announce, "Hey, cashless society now, everybody, we can trace everything you do," you don't have a right to kill anybody. And I would extend that step by step by step all the way to the point where now you're directly threatened with being killed then and there. Then you have a right. But before that, no.
Got it. So I guess even with abortion and or euthanasia and so forth, we're okay. We're righteous in watching it happen around us as well.
You do not have the moral right to be a vigilante and to kill an abortion doctor because he's performing an abortion. You don't have that right civilly under the law. You don't have that right morally under God's law either.
Okay.
I know what you're saying, Steve. I understand it. I really do. I understand it. And you're a thoughtful guy. So I'm glad you called me back. Let's talk again, okay? I'm overdue for a break, so let's do that now. We'll come right back to more phone calls right after this. This hour is supported by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Join the nation's largest Catholic-oriented credit union and receive $200 when you add a direct deposit. Learn more at NotreDameFCU.com/join. That's NotreDameFCU.com/join.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
It's the new world, man. Let's see. Hey, got a note here from Nathan about cashless societies. Nathan's in Mississippi, by the way. Good morning, Patrick. What, if anything, is wrong with the government beginning a cashless system? The last caller seems to think it is the mark of the beast, but it doesn't seem to me to have any religious connection. Money has value only because the majority agrees it does. So if we decided to use rocks or digital currency, it doesn't seem like it would be government tyranny, unless I'm missing something. No, I don't think you're missing anything, Nathan. It's an important point to bring up. Cashless society is code for, I think nowadays in this country, I think it's code for a one world government, totalitarian, we control every facet of your life kind of scenario. Because if you have cash, obviously you have a certain amount of freedom and also a certain amount of privacy. You can buy stuff with cash that's not traceable. And there are good aspects of that, and there are probably nefarious aspects of that if you're a narco guy, and you're not, obviously. But that's where I think that the gentleman I was talking to earlier might have been, you know, in his mind, digital currency, cashless society, that's a step in the direction of total totalitarian control over the people leading up to the mark of the beast. And remember in Revelation chapter 14, for example, where it talks about the mark of the beast, it specifically says that unless you receive this mark on your hand or your forehead, you will be unable to buy stuff, meaning you can't go to the grocery store or you can't buy a house or what have you. So that, I think, is the connection in the back of his mind. And it's not an unreasonable connection, but I don't necessarily share that view. I guess I'm sort of more in your direction that having a cashless society doesn't frighten me. I'm not worried about it. I certainly am not going to shoot somebody, God forbid, if the deputy comes to the door and says, hey, we're going to give you some Bitcoin. You have to give us all your cash, kind of like an analog to confiscating guns or something like that. And I, you know, okay, probably not my preference, but, you know, I'm not going to go to war over something like that. But that's just me. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jorge in Miami. Good morning, Jorge.
Good morning to you. A pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, sir.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I don't know if the world is upside down or I'm going through a depression. Let me think. I'm going to be short. John Thomas told me to be short, so.
Okay.
I'm watching TV, and I can't watch TV for too long. I look at Washington, D.C., and I see hate and greed. I look at the president of the United States, who for decades has been pushing abortion, and on Sundays, he sees the light and goes to church and receive the Holy Communion. I see terrorists killed.
Jorge, we're short on time, so just give me the cash value here so I can tell what you're asking about.
I need your guidance. I need to know. I need how you work that way too, or how do you handle it? What do you do to understand this madness?
Turn the TV off, number one. Unplug from the sources of media that are causing you this anxiety. And it's understandable. I've known people who have become very cynical and angry and suspicious and anxious because they have a steady diet of that kind of news. So my advice would be turn the TV off, go out, take a walk in the park, get a hobby going, focus on your wife and your kids. I don't know what your state of life is, Jorge, but the first and best thing you can do is cut that input off at the source. And you watch. What will happen is over time, probably won't take very long either, if you're not being constantly bombarded by all the doom and gloom and all the, you know, terrible things, whether real or imagined, that are going on, in a short period of time, you're going to stop worrying about it. And you'll start living. That's what you need to do, is just start living. And don't become enslaved to these inputs that are, of course, keep in mind that these sources in the media, that's how they make their money. If they didn't have people like you who are hanging on their every word, what's the latest outrage today that I can be outraged about? You know, what's the latest thing that the enemy political party has done that I can be outraged about? What's the latest catastrophe that's about to befall me that I can be worried about? If you never cut that off, you will die a slow death by a thousand cuts, mentally and emotionally, because all that does is just break people down. It makes them angry, and you don't want to live that way. So I really, honestly, Jorge, don't even need to know anything more than what you already told me, but I think that's your solution. Turn the TV off. If it's YouTube videos or blogs or podcasts or whatever, just turn it off. Listen to my show, of course. I mean, that goes without saying. Because here it's all about hope and encouragement here at Relevant Radio. So if this is going to be your one-stop shop, great. I think we can serve you very well here at Relevant Radio, please God. But all the other stuff, just shut it off. And, you know, you're going to live a happier life because you won't be distracted by all those things. And that's my prayer for you, Jorge. Thank you. Let's go to Joey now in, is it Beloit, Wisconsin? How do they pronounce that name? That's not how you'd say it in French, but how do they say it in Wisconsin?
Beloit.
Okay. Okay, awesome.
So, you're talking to that guy about when you can use lethal force, and I think I mostly agree with you there that you have to be threatened immediately to defend yourself with lethal force. I might think that maybe if you didn't do anything wrong and they're sending like your kids on one train, your wife on another train, and you on another train, maybe you could use it then. But also, St. Thomas Aquinas, I remember reading something about him, mm-hmm. mentioned that in certain circumstances, you may have a moral obligation to kill a tyrant. So if there's a Hitler running around, you're in the middle of World War II, and you have an opportunity and the ability, you should kill.
Well, let me pause you there. So we have to be careful how we invoke St. Thomas Aquinas. So he did not advocate, or did he say that it's okay to be a vigilante? So it's not as though if you perceive, let's say that you're like a German citizen and you're just there and, hey, Hitler's giving a speech, I'm going to go shoot that guy. St. Thomas did not endorse that, vigilantism. If you were in wartime and you were, you know, in the Allied forces, or even if you were just a good patriotic German who wanted to do something about what Hitler was doing, there are circumstances under which that could be morally permissible. Vigilantism is not one of them. And I want to make that part clear, because I think, you know, okay. just with all respect to the gentleman who called earlier, he's clearly a very thoughtful guy, no doubt. But I was getting hints of, like, when can I shoot somebody? You know, where's the line? As soon as I cross over it, I can shoot somebody. And who knows, maybe that's not at all part of his own mindset. But there are people out there who do look at this way. I've talked to them on this program, Joey. People who say, well, you know, absolutely, if a sheriff's deputy shows up on my doorstep to confiscate my guns, I will kill him. And I'm horrified by that, because that's clearly contrary to God's law. But some people, it's like almost as though they can't wait for the scenario where they can start killing people. It's a terrible thing.
Yeah. But what about your family if they're doing the train thing? Like I was saying?
You know what? Let me do this. I wanted to do it earlier, but I ran out of time. Let me quote to you the church's encapsulated discussion of the just war theory, because it applies here as well. Paragraph 2309, the strict conditions for legitimate defense by military force require rigorous consideration. Now, I want to pause here, because I know that some of you are going to write to me and say, yeah, but it's different, Patrick. That's for the military, or that's for a country. What I'm doing is I'm applying the same logic, the same moral logic for a country or a military. I want to now reduce it down to the individual, because quite frankly, self-defense can be understood individually or collectively. The government / the country is the collective individual. So here goes. Here's what it says. In order for this to be morally permissible, number one, the damage inflicted by the aggressor on the nation or community of nations must be lasting, grave, and certain. So we can equate that with killing your wife or your family or you. All other means of putting an end to it must have been shown to be impractical or ineffective. There must be serious prospects of success. And I draw everyone's attention to the very beginning of this in paragraph 2309. It says, these conditions must be present at one and the same time. In other words, all of these conditions must be present at the same time for a war. And here we're using it to look at an individual act of self-defense. They have to be present at the same time. There must be serious okay. prospects of success. I don't see that present. If your wife and your kids are being put onto a train and, you know, every 5 feet you've got a German soldier with a machine gun, is there really a serious prospect of success? No, I don't think so. Anyway, let's continue. The use of arms must not produce evils and disorders graver than the evil to be eliminated. The power of modern means of destruction weighs very heavily on evaluating this condition. And also, I mean, it's alluding here to nuclear war. So let's take those last two. Is there a serious prospect of success? You're standing on the train platform. You're going to grab the gun from the soldier next to you, hope that you can get it out of his hands, hope that you can shoot him. And then what? Then you get killed, yeah. and your wife and your kids get killed, and maybe innocent bystanders get killed. And then the last one is, the use of arms must not produce evils and disorders graver than the evil to be eliminated. I see a lot of potential for that on the train station platform, that maybe they'll be so angry. It's like, okay, kill them all right now. Just kill everybody right now. So even yeah. if we apply the just war theory, until and unless you are directly being attacked, I don't see how there is a moral, ethical permission slip to to kill somebody just because it looks like things are going badly. I'll let you talk, Joey. I'm sorry that I talked so long, but I wanted to get that part out.
Okay, and I see your point there with the you don't want to cause graver evils, but maybe if the scenario is ratcheted down or there's just two of them and you're military trained and you can see you could do it, maybe, yeah. And they're trying to take your, you know, where they're spread thin, okay. But what about, like, if I'm a strong man, let's say, and military trained, I'm not, but let's say I was, and I'm walking by and I see an opportunity, Hitler's out there playing tennis or whatever, and I see that my skill set is such that I can take him out in the middle of World War II, and I know that it would save lives, and I'm not military, but I'm military trained, but I don't feel like that person would be a vigilante either. You see what I'm saying? I feel like they would be doing, that's a tear. Would they be doing a moral obligation by taking him out, or would they, by assassinating him, or would they be now a criminal? That doesn't seem to make sense to me that they would be a criminal or a murderer.
Let's apply an historical, well, I understand what you're saying, Joey, and it's a thoughtful point. Let's apply that theory to somebody who in actual history did exactly what you're saying, John Wilkes Booth. He saw Abraham Lincoln as a tyrant and somebody who would not only was responsible for the death of countless Southerners during the Civil War, but also he by his own admission, he was very worried that it would lead to more death and destruction of Southerners because Abraham Lincoln would remain as president. So he shot him. He saw him as a tyrant. He had his reasons, and he thought, I'm doing what's right. And yet, I think you and I would probably both agree that John Wilkes Booth was an assassin and a murderer, not some sort of folk hero.
Right. But his reasoning was wrong. You can see what Hitler has done to the world 2 years into the war, let's say, and it's clear that he's a tyrant.
Yeah. Well, okay, fair enough. But what I'm saying is that John Wilkes Booth had the same view of Lincoln. Sic semper tyrannis is what he shouted in Latin as he leaped from the booth. I didn't mean that as a pun. As he leaped from the presidential box down to the stage, you know, thus always with tyrants. And his stated reason for killing Lincoln was that he was a tyrant. And he had killed many people, and he was going to kill more people if he remained in office. I don't know, something to think about, Joey. It's another way of looking at your question. I'm glad you raised it. Thank you. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. I hope you'll join me this June for sponsor Christendom College's Summer Consortium. I'll serve as MC for the weekend, celebrating the legacy of St. John Paul II. Register at jp2weekend.com. That's JP, the number 2, weekend.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
I have a note here from Michael. Thank you, Michael. He's listening on the Relevant Radio app regarding anxiety about the news. I was talking to a gentleman a moment ago about that. And he says, I have the same addiction to the news. My counselor told me the exact same advice that you gave earlier to that caller. I am trying to follow that advice. Thank you for the reinforcement. And the advice, if you didn't catch it, was a gentleman had called in, Jorge, and he's just going out of his mind with worry and concern about all the evil in the world and all that. So my advice was turn the TV off. Stop watching MSNBC. Stop watching Fox News. Stop whatever it is. And for that matter, if it's a blog or a podcast or a YouTube channel or whatever that's causing you to go out of your mind with anger and suspicion and fear and anxiety and all that, just turn that stuff off and you will lead a happier, better life. And the world's not going to change because you don't know about, oh my gosh, digital currency coming. Uh-oh. The world won't change just because you don't know about that. And your life will change and it'll get better.
Facts.
So thank you. Yeah, thank you, Cyrus. And thank you, Michael, for the note. How about Francie now in Ironton, Ohio? Good morning, Francie.
Good morning, Patrick. I wanted to call this morning to give maybe a little hope and witness to the lady who called earlier with the children that had fallen away from the church.
Yes, please do.
I have three children that I've raised, and I would say most of my life, although I'm a cradle Catholic, I've been a lukewarm Catholic, and we went to Mass, but it definitely was not the focal point of our life. And then suddenly it became important to me as my children were older, and they were pretty disinterested. Because
how old were they when you?
I'm sure.
How old were the kids when you had this change of heart?
In their late teens, early 20s.
Okay.
They're 31, 30, and 28 now.
So the kids were living in this sort of lukewarm lifestyle, and suddenly mom changes, and mom's expecting them to change, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's important. And, you know, we went to Mass. It was every Sunday, pretty much. But other than that, it wasn't part of our life. We didn't say daily prayers, say the rosary, novenas, you know. They all received their sacraments like
so
they were
happened?
Supposed to at the right times. And so now they're, you know, getting into relationships. And I had one son married, you know, at the Justice of the Peace. And I had a daughter cohabitating. And I had a son in pharmacy school, and he was just apathetic. And
so what happened?
Now I'm realizing that this is my fault, and I'm going to have to answer for this someday when I meet God. And so I was calling them on Saturdays, one in particular, because he had some children, and asking me if he's going to go to Mass, and I'd be happy to pick them up, and we could go together, and you could just hear the disdain in his voice. And every week I'd say, I'm not doing that again next week. I've asked him and he's not complying. And then of course the next Saturday come along and I'd still do it. I bought bulk green scapulars and had our priest bless them and started hiding them in their, under their pillows and in their, in their cars and under their mattresses and saying prayers every day. And anyway, 2020 hits, and all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, my son wants to get his children baptized, and they're all they were all married to non-Catholics.
That's good. I mean, that he wants to get his children baptized.
Catholic.
Is he making his way back to the church, Francie?
Well, you've actually spoken to him. He called you not long ago about his little boy worrying about mortal sin.
Oh,
and
okay.
And that little boy just made his first confession and first communion the other day.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And all of my little in-law children, they all 2 years ago came into the Catholic Church together.
I'm really happy to hear that. So it sounds like there's forward momentum in the right direction, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're all of us and all of my eight grandchildren and all my children were traveling to Columbus tomorrow to St. Leo's Oratory, because Cardinal Burke is going to be there for the feast day. So that's our day tomorrow.
Beautiful.
I just, in all of my apathy, God has blessed me tremendously.
I'm so, so, so happy to hear that. And what a positive outcome. Something you said, though, I'd like to touch upon that briefly, if I may, Francie, before we go. And that is that you said you're going to have to answer to God someday for that. And that's true. Objectively speaking, we all have to give an account for our lives. Jesus says we'll have to account for every idle word, much less all of our serious sins. So I understand that point, but there's a silver lining there. And that is that you changed by God's grace. And so you can look back and say, to the extent that my kids drifted away, whatever, is my fault for these reasons. But that doesn't define you as a person. It doesn't define you, those failures, as a mother. It's a feature as part of your time on earth and what you did. But look at how things turned around and went in the right direction. So I think there's, I mean, as you well know, but I'm just seconding the motion here. there's so much to rejoice in, even though you had to go through that desert to get to the point where you're at now. Do me one favor, Francie, if you don't mind. When you go to the special mass in Columbus, Ohio, do pray for me and for all of us here at Relevant Radio, because we are so committed to serving all of you as best we can that we could really use your prayers to help us do that better. So thank you for that. I appreciate the call. Let's go now. Let's see, where are we going to go? Let's go to Tony, waiting patiently in Oceanside, California. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Patrick. You hear me?
I can, yeah.
Hey, I have a quick question. I have a couple kids in martial arts, and, yeah. You know, I did martial arts my whole life, and I realized it. And now, you know, I'm teaching my kids the faith, and when they walk, how to genuflect when they walk into the mass, and how to, mm-hmm. when they get out of the pews and stuff, and the good stuff the father teaches kids. And I'm noticing, like, a practice, like, hey, they bow before they enter the dojo, and they bow when they leave, and they bow to the senseis. And I know this is not yoga, but in my crazy brain, I'm thinking this could be a slippery slope to.
I don't think so.
My son just think. No, you don't think so. Good. All right.
No, I think you're overthinking it. So, you've heard of a band called the Beatles, right, Tony? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. That was just a joke. So if you look at their early performances, you know, back in the 60s, when they would finish, what would they do? They would bow to the audience. And they were doing it. I mean, it was a showbiz thing back in those days. I don't know who does it too much anymore. But the main thing is they were doing it as a sign of respect to the audience. And that's all it is. It's all it is. There's no religious connotation. So when you bow to your sensei, it's a tradition in the martial arts, and it's a form of respect, but that's all. They're not worshiping a god or anything like that. They're just showing respect according to that tradition. That's all it is.
Discipline. I was thinking it was showing the children discipline, you know, discipline, like, or like, you know, military discipline, military bearing.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I mean, it to me, that seems a lot like saluting a superior officer.
Yeah,
so,
me too.
You know, yeah, you're just showing respect, and it's a requirement in certain situations. So that's all I think it is. I don't think you have anything to worry about.
Thank you.
And just tell them, you know what? Jesus is not your sensei. Jesus is Lord. He's God. So of all people who deserve respect, it's the Lord Jesus Christ, the triune God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But I'm sure your boys won't confuse that with bowing to their sensei.
No. Good. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good day. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you too. Yeah, you too. What is it, Cyrus? Wax on, wax off? Is that that's the formula, I think, isn't it?
Very good, Daniel San.
I tried. As I assume the crane position, let's go to Al in Pennsylvania. Good morning, Al.
My buddy Patrick, how you doing?
Well, I don't have a lot of time, Al, but I'm happy to talk to you again.
I am too, Patrick. I'm seriously thinking about going back to confession. Okay. I'm hemming and hawing about it. I listened to another station too, Patrick, a Christian station. I just want to make it real fast. And like I said, I always talk to you with respect, but there are a few things I just disagree with.
Okay.
As far as the digital currency, real quick, you can't have that. The American people ain't going to go for that. And you were talking about like taking your guns, the NRA and law-abiding citizens. I don't want to, God forbid, ever see bloodshed. Of course not. But there would be if the government ever tried. It's tyrannical. And this Christian station I was listening to, they were talking.
The issue is not, is this going to happen? Are people going to get riled? Will people rise up? I mean, things will happen, that's for sure. The question I was dealing with earlier is, do you have the moral right to kill somebody? And we use this scenario. If, let's say, the government shows up and says, hey, we're confiscating all your cash because it's now digital currency, you don't have a moral right to shoot and kill the sheriff's deputy who comes to your door to confiscate your cash or your guns. So why don't we keep it on that level? Because right. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, of course not. You don't want, God forbid, take a man's life as a sheriff. No. No, but the only thing I would do, if I was licensed to carry, Patrick, I'm not lying to you, okay? And you never want to take a life. You were saying like about Hitler making a speech or whatever. It would have been a good thing if Hitler was assassinated. He killed 6 million Jews. He's evil. He's rotten in hell right now. He's no good. He put babies in ovens. okay? And I'm not Jewish. I'm Italian and Irish.
Yeah.
And slaughtered children. And it's-
and this is a topic that's too huge for 45 seconds, Al.
Okay.
You know, unfortunately, okay, we're dealing with this big question with too little time. But can you and I at least agree that if the government says, hey, we're confiscating everyone's guns, that you would not have the moral right to kill the policeman who came to your door?
I don't want to kill somebody. No, no. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at least we're in agreement on that. That's a good start, don't you think?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Okay. And like I said, I enjoy listening to you. It's just
I appreciate
things
it.
I disagree with, but I...
Well, that's okay. No. I appreciate it. I am here to discuss issues with people just like you, Al. I'm glad you called today. I just wish there were more time. Well, until tomorrow, I will pray for you. Please pray for me and all of our callers today. See you tomorrow.